White Rocket Entertainment. White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 248.
This is the AU Wishbone, continued off-season coverage, brought to you by WhiteRocketBooks.com, by the book tour for Ken Ringer's Lorendo, and by Audible at audibletrial.com/AU Wishbone. Now here are John Ringer and Van Allen Plexico.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by the ongoing book tour for Ken Ringer's Lorendo. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we have several things to talk about tonight, but the thing that's foremost on my mind right now is our soundboard has crapped out again. I know you're weeping there. I know you've probably got a box of Kleenex out. You're having to dry your eyes. It's a sad, sad thing. Sad times for the Wishbone. I don't know what's going on, but once again, everybody else in the podverse gets to do everything they want, and we get nothing. Very frustrating. I need somebody to come in and just set this system up for me. But we will persevere and drive on anyway, because we got a lot to talk about. One thing I want to talk about first, though, before we get into anything else. Something very strange happened this weekend that I didn't expect to see. Something very controversial, very divisive, happened on my television. You know what that was, John?
No.
The Falcons are going to the Super Bowl. The Falcons are going to the Super Bowl. Is it the apocalypse?
The Falcons win the Super Bowl, it may be, but it's exciting. It was a great win, and I'm happy for them and happy for the people in Atlanta. It's good.
It was almost Auburn, Arkansas, you know, in terms of a one-sided affair. Man, they put it to them pretty good. So that's cool. You know, you and I are long-suffering Falcons fans that have just, seen one other ever occasion of the Falcons actually even getting to the Super Bowl, where they, of course, lost to the same team that Cam's Panthers last year lost to. So I really don't like the Broncos. I never used to have anything against the Broncos, but they just keep beating the teams I like. So after a while, you just kind of, you get tired of the Broncos.
My goal for this time is not to have any team captains be arrested the night before the game for solicitation or prostitution.
Right after they get Man of the Year from the NFL.
That's right.
Maybe they meant Man of the Year in contributing to the economy of downtown Atlanta or something like that, or wherever city they were in. Well, we've actually got some good Auburn stuff to talk about tonight, and we haven't done a show since, I think, what, January 4th or something like that, because we've been in kind of a dead period. There just hadn't been a lot going on. And we've been, frankly, like a lot of other shows, just kind of waiting for some movement, waiting for something to happen on the offensive coordinator front. And movement has happened.
Our long national nightmare is over. The Auburn's coordinator search is finished.
We have one.
And so the first thing I want to ask you is the night that Rhett Lashley left, whatever, 12 days ago, whenever it was, 10 days ago, what was your immediate reaction when you heard that he was leaving to be the offensive coordinator at UConn?
It's kind of like the guy that climbs out the window and jumps on his horse and rides off just before the guys with the pitchforks and torches get there. He's right ahead of the posse.
See, let me ask you this question. Was he going to leave this offseason no matter what?
I don't think he would have been Auburn's offensive coordinator next season under many circumstances. Maybe some, but not under many. I think it was one of those deals we've seen before where you are told it might be a good idea for you to look for other opportunities. And I think it worked out, though, because Auburn was kind of, and I don't mean Gus, I think Gus would have kept him forever, but I think that Auburn in general was ready for him to kind of move along and explore other career paths. And I think he needed to, right? Because nobody was ever going to take him seriously as long as he was just mini-me.
This is the other part of it. From the Rhett perspective, I think he interviewed for jobs and people said genuinely to him, we don't know whether you're any good at your job or not.
Right.
Because we can't tell if it's you or Gus doing the good things that happen with Auburn's offense.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to get a head coaching job, you need to go somewhere else and duplicate that success. And then people will go, oh, Rhett Lashley is really good. But right now, you know, if Auburn does great stuff on offense, people go, well, Gus did that. And so from his perspective, like people would say like, oh, he's insane. He was forced out or whatever. But in some ways, it's also like he was betting on himself.
Right.
That he was leaving to take a job that paid less money because this is the pathway to him becoming a head coach. He was not going to get a head coaching. If Auburn led the country in offense next year, he might not get a head coaching offer. So this is the pathway to him getting that. Hmm. And the other side of it, so that's the Rhett side. And then the Auburn side is, you're right, the offense, you know, needed to be shaken up a little bit after kind of the wackiness and the quarterback development stuff. And we needed something different. And so then we got to the search.
Right. Well, hold on. Now, here's the thing. Let's talk a little bit about the search, but here's the thing. The really interesting thing about the search, we really don't know and may never know because, and I know we have it on the agenda here to mention, but as we talk about the search and where it kind of went here and there before it ended up where it ended up yesterday, the thing that was really interesting about it is who wanted what and who was forcing whom to do what. Was there an existing list given to Gus? I mean, there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there, so we're going to get into that. But to me, that's the really interesting thing, because if we knew more about that, and I don't want to, I'm not going to say I know anything. I feel like a lot of these people that act like they're experts and claim to be experts, they're throwing around their opinions, their guesses, like it's fact. We don't know, right? All we have is we can look at some of the evidence floating around and try to draw our own conclusions, like Sherlock Holmes observing chalk on your back and deciding you've been at the pool hall or something. We can try to make intuitive guesses, but we don't know, and I don't think anybody knows outside of Jay Jacobs and Gus. And in fact, we don't even know if there was anybody else involved besides Jay Jacob and Gus. And we actually have a special guest coming up in a little bit that'll help shed some light on that. But talk about that search a little bit, and I'll throw my two cents in as far as that goes.
I mean, I think there was the interesting, in terms of like you were talking about reading the tea leaves and interpreting what happened, I think the interesting thing was there was an initial list of candidates that came out immediately, okay? And it was Chip Lindsey, mm-hmm. Eli Drinkowitz, mm-hmm. Jake Spavital, and somebody else. And, I think there was a feeling that like, okay, you know, some of these guys are guys that Gus is comfortable with or Herb's work with, and they're comfortable with them, and they think they would work well, and they would be okay with this. And then it kind of dragged out, and none of those guys got hired.
All right, and then we started. Hold on. We got to interject here. All right, we got to keep this phase out. Under the conspiracy theory scenario, those guys did not get hired on the first go round because they are too much like Gus, right? In the conspiracy theory world, the powers that be wanted Gus to stay on as sort of a Pat Dye, Bobby Bowden,
Tuberville
style coach, and let other people under him actually run specific things like the offense and the quarterback coaching and all that. And so under that conspiracy theory, Gus said, hey, here's these three or four or five guys that are in my tree. They do stuff similar to me. I'm comfortable with them. And the powers that be said, no, we do not want somebody in your tree that's like you, that you're comfortable with. We want to go way outside the box and bring in somebody. If Bart Isles was available, right, this dude from Texas.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Exactly. Bart Isles.
Well, we're going to talk about him, so don't.
If he were available, right, he has like a big black glasses and a mustache, okay, and a hat.
We're going to talk about him, but I think the point you're making about this, though, is it shifted from a who would Gus like and who would Gus be comfortable with to more of what I think of as kind of the Tuberville-ian search, which is you go and you look at who are the best four or five offenses in the country, and you call those people and see if you can hire them. That's kind of how Tuberville always did his coaching search, is he would look at like who the top 20 – you know, when he was looking for a defensive coordinator, he would look at who are the top 20 defenses in the country and a couple different stats, and who can I get off that list and start calling those people. Mm-hmm. And so I think the idea among the powers that be was Gus should call, you know, Lake and Riley at Oklahoma, which wasn't ever going to happen. Mm-hmm. For example, the guy at Oklahoma State or Mark Helfrich at Oregon or, you know, whoever else to interview them because they were, you know, or Noel Mazzoni or because they were, you know, offensive coaches, big time offenses and see if, you know, to hire one of them and Gus would be more of the Tuberville turn it over kind of coach like you're saying.
Right. Which is weird because it's like hiring Steve Spurrier and then saying, now go get Bobby Petrino as your offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had this debate before, and I mean, it's part of it to me is just logic. I mean, and I've noticed there have been articles written. There's been multiple articles out there about that. People have picked up on that same thread that we've talked about, which is, you know, if you hire Gus Malzahn as your head coach based on his amazing offense, as at least it used to be, then why do you keep him around if you don't want his offense anymore? I mean, is he that great of an administrator? Is that what it is? Is it his recruiting? Is it he's really good at hiring defensive coordinators? I mean, is it we just like him? Is it he's got, you know, cool glasses? We like the sweater vests? I mean, what, you know, we like the visor? What is it about Gus that you want to keep around if you're going to change the thing that he does? It's like hiring the Hulk and then saying, now you need red and gold armor and repulsors, all right? We're not interested in the whole strength thing. Stop being strong, you know, just get you some armor and maybe a bow and arrow and a hammer, you know.
And this is the other part of it is I think there's a middle ground here, which was we keep the Gus's offense, but we need to be shaken up a little bit.
Right.
We need to adjust some things. We need to change, you know, the way we call plays a little bit. We need to add some things to the passing game. Mm-hmm. And I think those were all on the table with whoever we hired as offensive
Absolutely.
Coordinator.
Absolutely. And that's what we ended up doing, but we'll get to that.
Right. So I think, you know, the idea that Gus would interview somebody, you know, runs a completely different offense and turn everything over to them was really surprising to me.
Yeah.
And clearly, you know, watching Gus for this long, you could see that that's not something – while he wanted to turn the offense over to somebody, I think, he didn't want to turn it over to somebody who did something different.
Yeah.
So
– well, let's talk about the ones we almost got real quick. Now, you – Art Briles, okay? That was the name – that I think if we did a Venn diagram of overlaps, would you agree with me that the same crowd willing to get take Art Briles would be the same, and this was the Bart Isles I was talking about, if that wasn't clear to everybody a minute ago, in a Groucho Marx glasses and mustache. But I suspect if my soundboard was working, I'd be, I don't have facts to back this up, but I suspect that there's a whole lot of overlap between the hire Art Briles, who cares about ethics and morals and all that crowd, and the crowd that wanted to hire Bobby Petrino as head coach, because the thing they would share in common is all we care about is winning, and they could set fire to infants in the street as long as they can make us beat Alabama. I don't care, right? Would you agree with that?
Probably. But the other thing with the Art Briles thing, and I'm going to just go back here again. We have a lost podcast from like early in the season when the offense was struggling and Art Briles was available and people were talking about bringing him in. This was like in, you know, whatever, end of September this happened. And I went on this 5-minute rant about Art Briles about how Auburn is never, ever, 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 ever going to hire him. And if you think for one second he's going to get a job as the offensive coordinator or the analyst or anything else at Auburn, you're insane. And here's why, okay? He was the coach at Baylor. They had a scandal under him where, you know, players were committing sexual assault, rape, things like that. He covered it up. He worked against the administration to protect the players and allow them to play and things like that. And people say, well, there's no evidence and stuff. But here's what Baylor did, okay? If you – and this is the – Baylor as an institution was pretty smart and clever about this. They hired a law firm, and they told the law firm, we want you to do an investigation, and we want you to then come and present the findings to the Board of Trustees. You will not, however, generate a big written report with point by point by point everything we've done wrong, because we will then at some point in discovery have to turn that over to all the lawyers who are suing us. Therefore, you won't actually collect any of that information written. You will give a very brief written report which summarizes kind of the scope of the bad things, and then verbally you will tell the Board of Trustees in a closed session what really happened, and that's what they did. And so there isn't any written report going point by point by point with all the terrible things that Art Briles did. But here's the thing I want you to think about. In all of college football and all the stupid and terrible things that college football coaches have done over the years, how many times has the athletic director and the school president been forced out because of something the college football coach did? How many times? Just that one.
It's pretty amazing.
That's it. So, I mean, that is the level of scandal we're talking about here. And the Board of Trustees got that report from the law firm, and they made that decision to force those people out. Okay? It wasn't some kind of public pressure witch hunt thing. They looked at the facts after getting that information and decided that Ken Starr and the AD and these other people had to go. So that's why Art Briles – and this is the other part. Art Briles is being sued by a bunch of people individually for his actions, and he's now suing Baylor, you know, for wrongful termination or whatever, so – or slander or something. So you want – if you hire him – you're hiring him, and every day there's going to be a new lawsuit. He's going to be deposed, and there's going to be, you know, he's going to have to go appear in court. And people are going to talk about this stuff. And if you're the if Gus Malzahn goes to Jay Jacobs and the president of Auburn University, whoever the incoming president is going to be, and says, "I want to hire this guy," they are going to look at it, and the school attorneys are going to look at it and go, "Eh, no." So it wasn't ever going to happen. And so that's all I have to say about the Art Briles thing.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, my response when you first said that was, if they wouldn't even barely give Bobby Petrino an interview, why on God's green earth would they give Art Briles the time of day?
That's right.
It just didn't make any sense at all. So, well, then they, you know, things kind of bounced around a little bit, and we heard about – I remember in rapid succession, we heard about the Oklahoma State coach. I can't think of it. Yurshich or something like that. I can't remember his name. The Oklahoma State offensive coordinator, and then immediately he took his name out of contention, and we figured, okay, he got a raise, right? So he was playing – I guess his agent must be Jimmy Sexton too. This guy represents everybody,
yes,
everybody this side of Vladimir Putin, but – So that guy was out. Then we went to Noel Mazzone. Was that like a blast from the past or something? What was that?
Well, I mean, Mazzone is not the same guy he was when he left Auburn in terms of his coaching and his coaching style. He really changed when he went to UCLA, and he did some good things there. And their offense was okay at A&M. I mean, they had a bunch of injuries and stuff. But, I mean, I think people – you know, people liked him when he was at Auburn.
Well,
players got along with him.
I've always said that he was one of the most creative offensive coordinators that I remember us ever having. I've talked many times about what he was able to do with that 1999 team that had it had no running game at all, and the quarterback play early on was extremely suspect coming out of 98. He was able to make Ben Leard into the SEC quarterback of the year by 2000.
So, and I think that's why he was on the list, because he left, and then later he was at NC State, coached Phillip Rivers, mm-hmm. and he coached a few other good quarterbacks. So I think that's why he was on the list, because of that quarterback work.
Yeah. Well, then he pulled out, and
Let me say something about the pulling out thing.
Yeah.
In college football job searches, no job is ever offered or declined, or anybody pulls out. You know, you either like the story is always, well, we only are offered it to one guy,
right?
And that's the guy who took it.
We got
it.
The guy we wanted, and blah blah blah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you watched Gus's press conference. I'm going to be charitable and say that he seemed positive about who we got, but if you think about how Gus was when we hired Will Muschamp, and then think about, which was like a 10, he was bouncing around like he just drank 12 espressos, right? Then think about how he was when we got Kevin Steele, which was, well, you know, it's not, you know, it's not a huge blow your socks off hire, but here's the reasons why this is way better than you think. And we were all like, oh, okay, let's give him a chance. Then there was the press conference yesterday where Gus, it kind of reminded me of during the coup that overthrew Gorbachev briefly. Do you remember that?
Yes.
In 1990 thereabouts, 91, the vice president of the Soviet Union and the head of the KGB and a couple other guys temporarily overthrew Gorbachev. And they had a press conference where they're sitting there at a table, and they're like trying to give these reasons of why this was a great thing and everything. And it wasn't really coming across. So I'm not upset about the hire. We can go ahead and transition now, I guess, into the actual person we hired. I'm thinking that there's a lot of potential there. I'm just thinking that this was not who a lot of people wanted, and here's the weird thing. Was it who Gus wanted and the powers that be are upset, or did they just say, well, dang, everybody we wanted said no, so let's go ahead and let Gus get his person? After all, it's gone on for 10 days now, and people are making fun of us, and Lord knows we at Auburn are so dang sensitive, right? Anybody says anything bad about us, we got to freak out and go to DEFCON 1. So, hey, if they're saying bad stuff about us on Feinbaum, and if they're saying bad stuff about us on the bunker, good Lord, man, we got to do something. Quick, push the button, eject.
See, I don't care about that at all. Like the people are saying bad stuff about us doesn't matter.
But
what does matter?
It's easy for you and me to say that.
But signing day is coming, and this is the biggest one of this gigantic recruiting weekend, and the offensive players needed to know. You want to get those guys and keep those guys, you have to tell them. So there really was a deadline. They wouldn't say that, but I think the deadline was Friday.
So did Gus go to the powers that be and say, look, I've tried to get everybody on your little list, and they all said no, and it's freaking recruiting weekend, man. Let me hire who I can get.
See, but here's another scenario.
Okay.
Gus interviews Jurkic,
mm-hmm.
and Jurkic is interested. He loves the idea. He's interested in the money and all that stuff. And Gus is like, I don't think there was a good fit there. I don't think it could work well together. And so, no. Well, I mean, why is it the idea that, like, if we didn't get him, he said no?
Well, that's fair.
Like that. I mean, hiring is a two-way process.
Right.
You know, you're the job seeker and the job offerer, and both sides can say no. And so some of these occasions, we may have interviewed those people, and because this is the other part, I think one of the things that the last coaching staff last year had really good fit and cohesion.
Yeah.
And I think that was a contrast to 2015. And I think it was important for them to hire somebody that was going to continue and not disrupt that. So I think fit was a big deal in terms of both like the offense ideological fit, but also in the personality, because you're going to spend a gazillion hours with this person in meeting rooms, on road trips in cars and planes and hotel rooms and stuff. So you better get along with this guy. I mean, it's not a small thing. If you were in the room with this person, you're like, I can't stand this guy. And, you know, we've only been together an hour. That's a problem.
Yeah, well, that's
so
fair.
I'm not saying that was the deal, but I'm also like, when you see people don't get the job, don't assume it was always their choice.
Yeah, I guess it's just that people think if you're going all the trouble of interviewing and everything, you've determined to a certain degree that you want them.
Yeah, you determine you might want them. But okay. Maybe Gus and this Jurkic guy have never had a face-to-face conversation before either.
That's fair.
So that's – I mean, I think a lot of times with these kind of things, you determine you are interested, and both sides are gauging the interest. You know,
yeah.
How much is Auburn willing to pay? How much control am I going to get? You know, how much recruiting are they going to expect me to do and that kind of stuff? Well, can I bring my five guys with me and fire the offensive line coach and stuff? So,
yeah, that may be too.
So that's the other part. Like, I mean, we're hiring Chip Lindsey. He didn't bring anybody with him. What if these other guys said, that's great, you got to get rid of Cody Burns and Herb Hand?
Yeah, that could happen. I could see it. Well, the other thing is that this Jurkic guy, every time I hear his name, I think about the monkey facility at Emory, so I think it's probably better there. Well, I mean, all right, so let's go ahead then. We hired Chip Lindsey from Arizona State, who was from Southern Mississippi, who was from Auburn. He was our analyst in 13, and he's obviously a guy that had a connection to Gus. Gus is familiar with, has had a good deal of success at those schools since he left Auburn. I know he didn't have as great a success at Arizona State last year, but I was reading how, I don't know if people know this, he was down to like his fourth string quarterback very early in the season, apparently. So, and he had some other players hurt. So he was working at Arizona State kind of with what we were working with in, like, you know, the Georgia game in the second half all season, and still, you know, did okay. So, you know, I'm curious to see what he can do with an actual full arsenal of players, you know, high caliber players like we've got, hopefully.
The two things that really excited me about Chip Lindsey as a candidate, I mean, number one, that he already had connection with Gus and he was on the staff and before. So, but also, like, he was a high school coach in Alabama at a bunch of places, a bunch of big places. And a high school coach in Georgia at Lassiter. He actually coached Philip Lutzekirk in high school. And so he was a high school coach at Spain Park in Birmingham and these other places. So he has connections to the high school coaches in Alabama, and I think they will respect him as a recruiter and as a coach who came from where they are. And so I think that's important. And the other part is, I mean, I don't get worried. I mean, I went and actually watched some Arizona State offense game film because I'm insane, but I love that offense at Southern Miss when he was there for 2 years. I mean, the 2015, that offense really kicked butt.
Yeah.
And they were really, really fun and really, really, really explosive with a ton of big plays. And so if I'm excited about that. I mean, I'm that part makes, you know, gave me – I was excited about.
Well, you just break down film is what you do, John. That's just what you do. But here's a quick run through his resume at Southern Miss, which I think is what's really valuable here. Broke five single-season school records, 312 completions, 4,263 passing yards, 6,758 total offensive yards, 67 touchdowns, 528 points. They became the second team ever in Division I with a 4,000-yard passer, a 1,000-yard receiver, and 2,000-yard running backs. That's not bad. That's not bad.
And that's what we want.
Yeah, so that we've got a at the press conference at the overthrowing press conference, Gus said that he's turning the offense over to him. It's going to be his offense, and he's going to be calling the plays. Chip Lindsey will be designing the offense, calling the plays, putting in his passing system. In fact, they're even discussing changing our terminology, which is something even Kevin Steele didn't do when he came in. I mean, this is a pretty big revamp, overhaul. This is like an overhaul because they're wanting to put in, you know, everybody agrees that the thing Gus needs to do the most is put in a more sophisticated passing system. I can't tell you how many times I've read that his passing game is just too simplistic. Now, it seemed pretty darn effective when Cam and Nick Marshall were throwing it, but okay, I mean, you know, it's still, people want a more sophisticated passing game. We've got the receivers for it. We've got the quarterback for it. We got the offensive line for it. I guess if you're ever going to do it, let's see. What do you think about him handing everything over to this guy?
I mean, I think it's good in a sense in that I think the defensive coordinators in the SEC had a real book on Gus and Rhett and their tendencies and all that kind of stuff and the way they called plays and different points of the game and different formations and stuff. And so I think we needed to shake it up just from that perspective. Like, you need to shake it up every few years just because, you know, when you're playing these really good defenses at Georgia and Alabama and LSU, places like that, and they get a book on you of what your tendencies and how you act and what you like to call, and then it's twice as hard. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know that you wish that we could run like the 2010 and 2013 offense, like Frozen and Amber forever.
Yes, I do. That's my dream world.
But, and I think like it's going to be more like that than people think it's going to be something completely different.
Yeah.
I watched the Arizona State stuff. The quarterback was in the shotgun. There was one running back next to him. You know, they had guys coming in motion sometimes. And, you know, they handed them the ball on the speed sweep. They threw some little screens to the outside. I mean, some of the downfield passes were different. And so that part, you know, I'm excited about it. I think he likes to throw the ball more than Gus and Rhett threw the ball.
Well, the offense was not the problem at Arizona State the last couple of years.
No.
They were losing games like 60-55.
But I think his like Auburn, like if there's 70 offensive plays in a game, Auburn's been like 45-25 running, okay? And he's like 35-35. So I think it's going to be more pass, which honestly, we got Stidham, we got these receivers. I vote yes on that, like more passing, you know, because I think we could, number one, we can do it and it'll work. And number two, I think it takes advantage of the talent we have. And I think it's just going to open things up for Petway and Carry On, you know, to have more success because the defense is going to have to be running around covering those receivers and backing up and stuff. And so I just think that part is a good thing.
They're not going to be running into 9-10 man fronts as much, is what you're saying here.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And he still, he had quarterbacks at Southern Miss and in Arizona State. He had quarterbacks run the ball some. That was part of the offense. It's not, you know, they did read option stuff. So I think the idea that it's going to be like insanely different, it's going to be, you know, the same kind of stuff, the same kind of spread passing, run the ball to have success. A lot of the same running plays. I think they're probably going to be the same, but you're right. I think it's going to be the passing game is going to be different and more passing. And the other part is the big criticism of Gus and Rhett was recruiting and developing quarterbacks. How many times have we heard that in the last two years? A million. And
two
so
months.
This is it. This guy's is the, you know, a good reputation developing quarterbacks, and they're going to turn the quarterbacks over to him. And I think, you know, we have, with the guys coming on campus, you know, now we have more quarterback depth than we've had in, I couldn't tell you when.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I got to tell you, I am kind of sad that Gus said he's going to retire his clipboard. He won't even have his clipboard anymore. I just don't know. I mean, I'm afraid it's going to be like they used to say. I've said this before. I'm afraid it's going to end up being like with Bobby Bowden in his later years when they just didn't need him anymore. And the old joke was they would just unplug his headset and he'd just walk around with his headset unplugged while everybody else ran the team, you know. So I hope Gus isn't walking around with an unplugged headset for 3 hours and everybody else is running the game.
I mean, I do, again, Gus is the head coach and he has a job as the head coach to run the whole team, not just the offense, and to manage the game, you know, you know, when do we go for it? When do we call timeout? When do we be conservative? When do we attack? And that kind of thing. And to help with the overall game planning and that kind of stuff. And to work with the team as a whole in terms of working with the players and, you know, and taking care of them, preparing them and stuff and coaching them up. So I think, you know, in that sense, it's going to be good for him. I think, you know, I think the we talked about this a lot after the Clemson game and stuff. Like, I think the minutia of the game planning and play calling was stressing him out. And supposedly at the press conference, when he said he's giving up the clipboard and the play calling, like, Kristi Malzahn was in the back, like, pumping her fist.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess at this point, because I'm sure there's probably some of referencing it as we move along here, I guess it's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. So, on the AU Wishbone Podcast, so what have we got in the mailbag?
All right, we got some questions. You ready?
Yes.
All right, first question comes from Theodore Roosevelt.
Again, Mr. President, sir.
And he says, this one's for Coach Snyder.
Ha!
He says, what do you think of that young whippersnapper, Bear Bryant?
Coach, hold on. Let me get him on the voice on the Skype here. Boop, 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 boop. Hey, what is this thing beeping in my office? What is this? Is this aliens? What's going on here? Who is Bear Bryant? He was a fine young intern on my staff, but we sent him away during the Spanish-American War to the Philippines to learn some new offensive systems. So I've brought back nice bottles of bourbon from there. It was fantastic. So what's this thing beeping? I'm out of here. Goodbye.
All right. The other part of his question is, how do you think Rhett leaving affects Stidham? I mean, it doesn't affect him in terms of is he coming, because he's already on campus.
Right. He's
basketball game.
He's good to go, yeah. Yeah, and I think that it's just a personality thing, because he's got to be excited to have a little more sophisticated passing offense. I'm more concerned about Joey Gatewood. I know that's, quote, the name that must not be mentioned in front of John, unquote, but I am. I mean, the only player, all the players we have on the team have been very excited about, you know, I mean, like Kerryon Johnson was very excited. Everybody was very excited in their tweets and everything after the hire. The only person who's been like, what, was Joey Gatewood. So, I what's really going to kill me? What's really going to ultimately kill me is when it finally comes down for Gatewood to sign, and it's going to be one of those deals where he's still committed to us, he's still committed to us, he's still committed to us, and then it becomes like the dead period, you know, and he goes, I'm committing to Alabama, I will take no more questions, bang. I'm just going to like drive over to his house and just cry in his front yard. I'll roll his trees.
I'm really excited. I mean, we were talking about the depth chart. So we got Sean White.
That's called pulling a Yeldon, by the Yeldon, yeah. Yeldon? Yeldon.
Yes,
Yeldon.
TJ Yeldon.
That's called pulling a Yeldon, yeah.
I mean, we got Stidham.
Mm-hmm.
We got Sean White.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got Tyler Queen, who's
We got Woody. Woody, for crying out loud.
Yeah, we got Woody Barrett,
who I think
is the future.
I think he's the future.
And then, in addition to Stidham, we got this other quarterback commit, Malik Willis.
So he's supposed to be good.
I'm excited about him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that guy has a lot of potential.
He led his team to the state championship game. I think he lost it, but he did, like, amazing stuff in it. So
yeah,
he's kind of under the radar.
Some really good stuff in there about him. And to me, like, I think that guy is the future. Like,
okay.
2 years down the road, 3 years down the road, that guy is going to be the starting quarterback,
well,
Malik Willis.
Clearly, I didn't know anything about what I was talking about 2 years ago when I predicted who our quarterbacks would be going forward. So I'm just not going to say anything about that.
All right. Our next question comes from Daniel Henry, who says, I'm bad at giving really long questions, so I'll try and keep this one shorter. Given that Lindsay coached Lutzen Kirkham, guys that we have on the roster and guys we're bringing in and the stats below, do you feel confident he'll use the tight end more than Gus and Lashley? And he did throw the ball a little bit more to the tight ends. Like at Arizona State last year, they had 12 catches and 6 TDs. So, I do think he will. I mean, I think the JUCO tight end, Canella, is going to be a big part of that. Yeah. So I could definitely see us throw to the tight end more. And he says, more or less hopeful for next season with the new hire?
Well, the only way we could use a tight end less would be if we were running the run and shoot from Houston back in the was it the late 80s, early 90s, when Houston had the run and shoot, four wide receivers, a running back, and a quarterback.
Yeah.
So, but are we more excited? Yeah. I felt like Rhett could have done a good job based on what I saw when he had all the tools in his toolbox last year, this past year. So I would have been perfectly happy to give one more go-around with that formula and see what they could do with an actual quarterback that's not hurt all the time and you know, good receivers growing up and all that. But with this guy supposedly being kind of a whiz and everything, and at least in the passing game and all that, and we already know we can run, then, yeah, aren't you excited?
I'm excited. Our next question comes from Bradley Blackman, who says, how do you foresee the offense changing with Lindsey's passing background, especially the run game with Pettway carry-on? Will carry-on's role change, or will he still be the counterpunch to Pettway? Also, do you think Gus will be as hands-off as he says he will? Or will we have Gus throwing the trump card whenever he feels the need?
Well, that's going to be interesting because that's how you get tension on the staff, and that's how Gus wanted to get away and be his own head coach. You know, isn't it ironic, right? Gus wanted to be a head coach so he could run his offense without somebody interfering, and he becomes a head coach and has to quit running his offense. That's just weird. But yeah, I mean, I will see. That's a very important chemistry thing, you know, because that's where it could all go wrong or go right.
I don't think the running game is going to change a ton. I really don't. I think because the other part is the running game mostly worked. I think there's some specific, you know, some things they'll tinker with, and it's also like if you bring some new wrinkles that keep other teams off balance because they've seen the same stuff from us over the last 5 years, or whatever, then that will be good. So I think that's a good idea. But also I think a lot of the stuff that Gus and Rhett and Herb Hand have been doing in the running game have worked pretty well, and I think we'll continue to do that. I think the changes will be felt more in the passing game.
Yeah, I totally agree.
All right, next question comes from Emily Rios, who says, I'm totally fine with this hire. Does the timing make you think the report on Jacobs meddling was true? Like, once it was out there, Jacobs had to let him hire who he wanted all along.
Well, that's kind of where I was going earlier. But
that is where you go. Like, those reports came out Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Thursday night?
Yeah.
Friday night.
Somewhere
those
in there,
reports
yeah.
came out Friday night about the meddling and the, you know, put the pressure on Gus. And then Saturday morning, boom, we had, you know, they announced him, you know, whatever, like at 8 o'clock Saturday morning. So
yeah.
I think that part was, I mean, it's interesting. I felt like that deadline was there anyhow because of the recruiting, but it's interesting that when those stories started to leak out, maybe the powers that be or whatever had to back off and let Gus hire who he wanted.
Well, that's the thing, right? I'm just imagining Jay opens the paper, sees Kripia's article there, and goes, "Cheese it, they're on to us. All right, Gus, go ahead."
Jesus, they're on to us.
I think it was that. Remember that lamp in Chizik's office that we've talked about that had the microphone in it? I think that might have been it. Skarbinski's handed it over to Kripia. Scarbo has handed the secret lamp with the microphone in it over to Kripia now. Tinker, Trooper, Taylor, Spy.
Our next question comes from Rusty Owens, who
Rusty.
Says, are you going to mention the resemblance to a certain Auburn podcaster?
I wasn't sure whether he meant you or me, because he kind of looks like our love child, John.
I think if someone did a photo – I think you're right. If someone did a photo mashup of you and me today, it would look like Chip Lindsey.
That's just because I've gotten old and fat, okay?
That's it.
In my trim days, I don't think there was a lot of resemblance. But now that I don't have any hair and I've gained all this weight, yeah. Oh, well. Oh, well.
All right,
can't have it all.
Rusty makes a good point. He says, not so much a question as a statement. If the rumors are true about the good old boys, then I want Gus to win big to shut them up.
Oh, Lord. I keep being told about this thing called the bunker, and I just want Gus to drop a bunker buster. You know, I just don't have any. I said earlier we would have a special guest. I had a bit, but I'm going to save it for the next time because we're going to talk about recruiting and stuff next time, and we don't really have time tonight. But I'm going to bring in Billy Bunker. Billy Bunker has some things to say to straighten us out. All right. He's got some theories. He knows some stuff. He's talked to Pat Dye at the bar, at the diner. Okay. At 3 o'clock in the morning, he and the bagman talked to Pat Dye. He knows stuff. Okay. He knows what Jay Jacobs is doing when nobody's looking, man. So he's going to come on.
This is the other part about you were talking about the perception of, oh, we don't know what we're doing. We got to hurry. Like if Gus had hired somebody in 5 minutes,
yes,
after Rhett was gone, people would say, oh, the fix was in. He hired one of his guys. There was never a real search. And instead, we did a real search. We interviewed all those people to go, oh, it's just a internal power struggle. They can't decide. You know, they can't. No one will take the job.
It's because as soon as Rhett left, even before Rhett left, these Alabama trolls had already typed into their computer, it's a complete circus at the barn. Look at the meltdown at the barn. And they have it sitting there with their finger on the enter button. And they wait for like 24 hours to go by. And they're like, I get to hit the button. And they hit that button and it goes out. That's it. Morons.
You're funny. All right. Auburn Tiger Talk says, when will Chelsea blow it in the Premier League?
They will not. This is our year, man. I got my Chelsea flag hanging right over my head here. This is our year. This has been, John, this is amazing. This is not only wasting our time, but really quickly, other than Auburn football, hey, we went to the Sugar Bowl, right? Auburn went to the Sugar Bowl. That was really cool. But other than that, my first season in Formula One, my driver won the world championship. Of course, he then retired from the sport and left me with nobody. But, hey, he's undefeated, 1-0. I said, this is like if Auburn had won the national championship in 2010 and Cam left and Auburn said, all right, we're done with football. We're good. We're good with football. We're moving on to basketball now. Basketball's cool. The Falcons are going to the Super Bowl. Auburn basketball is looking good. Man, it's suddenly turned into a pretty darn good sports year, at least for me. I feel like Chelsea's getting very good shape, very good shape. Thanks for asking.
You're funny. that wasn't me. That was Auburn Tiger Talk. Aeutitude says, will you be sticking to facts or be introducing alternative facts that Auburn won the championship? we're staying away from the politics.
Auburn was in the BCS game, beating Alabama and Clemson in a three-way game. That happened. I don't know what you people are talking about. Auburn beat Clemson and Alabama in college football's first three-way game. I saw it. You need to report it.
WDE2U says, does this OC hire feel more like Tony Franklin and Scott L. something, in a sense, a last-ditch effort to fix the ship?
No, I mean, it feels to me more like bringing in Chizik and Petrino in 2002, because 2001 was the 7-5 year, and we went out and got a different. So we've got a new defensive coordinator last year. We got a new offensive coordinator this year. So we really have gone into Tuberville mode. You're right, where we start chucking the coordinators over the side or allowing them to gracefully exit for a much lesser job, but one that could help them. But, yeah, it feels to me more like 2002 than 2008, and I'm going to stick to that.
That's fair. All right.
Can't make me change.
Dan in NC said, almost every coach eventually does it, but how do you feel about Gus retiring his clipboard?
Yeah.
And are you hopeful for the new OC?
Well, he retired the visor, and then he brought it back. But, the clipboard, it's – But, he retired those flip things, too, when we got the Oregon play card. So, it all evolves. It's fine. It's like I said, as long as he's not his headphone didn't unplug, then I'm fine.
And, again, I think it may help him be more relaxed, positive, bring positive energy to the team. Because I think when he was in the minutia of it, it was stressing him out, and it was the whole team was being tight as a result. So,
well, look, if he's the one in there doing it every day, he knows what works. He knows what he needs to be doing. If he thinks he needs to be doing X versus Y and let somebody else do Y, he knows, right? I mean, we don't know.
Yes.
I'm really going to trust the opinion of some guy in the bunker or whatever that is over the guy who's actually the coach, okay? I'm really going to do that. No, I'm not. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to trust Gus to know what he needs to be doing.
I agree. And again, I think, you know, they hired I think Lindsay at Southern Miss was great, and I think the high school ties are big. Like, I think that part, having a lot of experience, and I think the quarterback development piece is big. He's done that. Mm-hmm. He's shown he can develop quarterbacks and make them better, and I think we have a lot of quarterback talent on this roster so that we will not be in the situation we were in the last 2 years.
Yep, I agree. Any other questions?
That's it.
All right. Well, the only around the SEC we have is that Clemson beat Alabama.
And who suggested that on this very podcast?
So that's our show for this week. Okay, I guess you got one right. All right, you got one right. Very good. Very nice. But I tell you what, and I give you credit. But you know, in retrospect, that Alabama team, we knew it had weaknesses. We just didn't know if Clemson was good enough to exploit them. And dang it, by one play, they did. Give them credit.
The only thing I wanted to say about it was I really thought that Deshaun Watson's performance to me in that game was a lot like Cam's performance in the 2010 game, mm-hmm. where at the beginning of the game, everything went against his team, and Alabama was trying to intimidate them. They were mm-hmm. hitting him. They were hitting the other guys on offense, trying to knock him out of the game, mm-hmm. trying to bully them and intimidate them, and trying to just take over the game completely. And he was the whole team. Like, no one else on his team could do anything. He had to do it, and he had to take those hits and get up and make plays to lead his team. And as soon as he started making plays, then everybody else loosened up and started making plays. Mm-hmm. But it was all on him. So that's the part that I thought was very impressive. It was very much like the mental toughness and leadership was the same kind of thing that Cam had in the 2010 game.
Yeah, yeah, and that's right. And Mike Williams too, I think, was defense was just good enough to keep Alabama under control, to allow them within scoring range of Clemson. Because in other words, if Alabama had kept scoring, then it wouldn't have mattered that that Watson was able to score, because he wouldn't have caught up. But you have to hold them down. It's a two part thing. You have to hold Alabama down, and you also have to be able to score on their defense. And that's two tall orders. But they were able to hold them down, you know, not as well as LSU did, but almost, and then score.
Because Alabama couldn't really throw the ball.
We knew that. We just had to see if somebody could really take advantage of it. So
yeah.
So that was very good. I like the fact that the dynasty, I've been pointing out, Alabama played in one more national championship. This senior class at Alabama played in just one more national championship game than Auburn seniors. Now you can say, well, yeah, that's one more. Well, absolutely it is. But for this all-time dynasty that was supposed to just rock college football to its foundations and shake up the world, not so much. I mean, they played in two national championship games in the last 4 years, and they won one of them. We played in one, and we lost it. So congratulations for the one they won, but that's not a humongous dynasty that shakes up the world of winning national championships. So are they ready to fire Saban and go ahead and get Dabo now? Does the Dabo era begin soon?
If he keeps having success and Alabama struggles at some point with, you know, the losses and stuff, then you'll hear that.
That would be so funny. I just want that to happen so bad for them to, and then him say, no, I'm happier at Clemson. Y'all go do something else. I mean, he probably wouldn't, but it would just be so funny if he did. So, all right. Well, we're up against the time. We're going to have to wrap up and get on out of here. Any last thoughts, and then we'll close it up.
No, look forward to a couple weeks to get back, talk about signing day.
We got to talk about recruiting and signing day, and also we've got the Wishbone Awards coming up probably sometime soon. Maybe in our next, maybe two shows from now, we'll do the Wishbone Awards and hand out awards to the players that did stuff or had cool names or whatever on this year's team. And we'll talk about the basketball team some too, because they beat Alabama. That was awesome. I can't believe we didn't mention that. They
beat
knocked
Alabama
the
by
stuff
20.
In. Oh, they knocked. And yeah, I saw a tweet from an Alabama guy. He goes, Barn beats Bama by 20. Frat boy scores three-pointer at buzzer. That made it even better. It made it even better. All right. Well, I guess that will do it for this week. Our time is up. We thank you for yours, and War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle. So what becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy?
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right.
Take it easy.
Night.
Go to bed.
Go to bed.